today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, wow, that's like art, you know? Salvador Dali-esque. That is Precious Time from Pat Benatar at MTV.
All right, Patrick, I'm hanging out outside again today.
Yeah.
You're on the back deck, and it's sunny and 88 degrees
nice.
Fahrenheit.
Nice.
And we have like an awning back here, so at least I'm not melting
in the sun.
In the sunlight. Shadow already abandoned me, had to go inside. got too hot for him.
Yeah. He's wearing that fur coat. But
he understands the concept of air conditioning.
That's right.
So anyway, all right. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And what we're going to talk about today, if you will grant me again entree into the book nook.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about a book that I recently read. I finished this a couple of weeks ago, so I think it's still pretty fresh.
Yeah, cool.
So here's the book. It is called I Want My MTV.
Nice.
And it is on Penguin.
Okay.
So that's legit. And and it was published in 2011.
Oh, okay.
2011, okay.
Right.
And it's by Rob Tenenbaum and Craig Marks. And let me just tell you this. So, and it's pretty thick. It's it's a good 500 pages, this
wow.
thing. All right. And I will just say it's written in oral history.
Oh, cool. I like
okay?
that.
Okay. Right? So... And I will say, I'm not always a fan of that format, but for this, it really, really works well. Here's why. Because to write the history of MTV, and this basically goes from the formation of the development of the channel. So, you know, when the idea came about and all that they went through to get it up and launched.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through the early 90s. And there's a reason for that, because at that point in time, basically, it ends with there's a little bit about it, but not much. With the launch of the show The Real World,
uh-huh.
which was a reality show that had no connection at all to music, and basically changed the whole trajectory of the channel from that point on.
MTV
kind of just became a reality
yes.
show network, and pretty much, to a large extent, abandoned music after that. So
mm-hmm.
this is sort of what you would call the golden era of MTV, right?
Yeah.
From our perspective, I would say, although I think their ratings, went way higher after they got rid of all this stuff.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I think so too.
Which is why they did it, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, but the reason why I would say the oral history works really well is because to tell a story of a channel like this, it's really a lot of small stories. It's a lot of like tidbits
yeah.
and things like that, and that's what you get out of it. What the authors do really well here is. A lot of it is just the history of music videos.
Mm.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? Because that's essentially, those two things go hand in hand. MTV, when MTV launched, there weren't that many music videos available. Everybody sort of knows that, and that's how certain bands got exposure, just out of necessity. But really, because of MTV, it sort of launched the video revolution, right? It got bands into the idea of creating music videos. It got the music industry, discovered that was a good, marketing avenue for them. And so you kind of can't tell one story without the other.
Right. That makes sense.
Right?
Yep.
So anyway, there's so many just like, to me, the fun of the book was just how many like just behind the scenes little stories you get as opposed to the big, the big picture. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
Taken as a whole, you get that sense. But the fun of it really is just the small little stories, right? So, like, for me, for whom MTV hit at probably just about the right time, I was in high school when
yeah.
we got it on our cable, and I just watched it all the time back then when it was just, like, all music videos. To read a lot of the stories about, how the videos were developed and how big sort of like a lot of the naysayers were about this whole thing
yeah.
and how much arm twisting it took to get some people to embrace it, ultimately because others had big success with the format, obviously, everybody's going to sort of come around eventually.
Yeah, eventually. Right.
Exactly. And so, a couple things I'll mention that I thought were just like really entertaining was okay. like some of the stuff about controversial videos. And I think I sort of missed some of this. Like I think we all knew like about the PMRC and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't like as a kid, as a teenager, other than just sort of being some, you know, annoyance. It wasn't like I really understood or paid much attention to what was happening
no.
with that, right?
No.
To give an example of that, like one of the things I thought was so interesting, Tom Petty's Don't Come Around Here No More
mm-hmm.
video.
Yep.
The one where he's like, it's like the Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, with the little thing, tiny right? glasses. Yeah.
Yeah. That was apparently a hugely controversial video.
Was it really?
I had no idea. Did you know?
No.
Right. And the reason why, and it was apparently a target of the PRMC, no, PMRC. Remember, at the very end of the video, or toward the very end of the video, Alice character is a cake. She's a cake.
I remember that.
On the table,
yeah.
and the band members are basically like slicing her up.
That's right.
And consuming her, right?
Right.
And so you could say, well, you know, I guess you can see now why that might not sit well with some
yeah.
people, right? I totally over my head, I guess, as a kid.
Me too. No yeah. I no clue.
Thought anything about that, right?
That's interesting. Yet they still continued to show it, so it wasn't.
I think so.
Like it was yeah. banned. Yeah. Right.
No, and there were a lot of videos that were banned. There's discussion in there about the standards and practices that they had
mm-hmm.
and how every video would get reviewed and they would go back to directors and have them, you know, do recuts and things like that, certain things. And there's a lot of stuff like that. Some interesting stuff in here, just as I mentioned about the development or the growth of music videos as an art form. Like David Fincher was like one of the big
yes,
directors early
I
on
knew that.
And stuff like
yes.
that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He became like a superstar music video director
yeah.
like really quickly, you know? Stuff like that, you know, these guys started to, the music video budgets got so big with the major labels that these guys could start to put together like little, you know, mini movies.
Yes,
almost,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle was another one that was controversial that, again, I sort of like, really? And it was because of the scene where, like, Axl's, like, it was sort of a Clockwork Orange kind of thing. He's, like, strapped to a chair and forced to watch, like, violent videos or something like that on the screen,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so because of that, it was apparently quite controversial. MTV wouldn't play it except at, like, the middle of the night.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
of course, that only made people more interested in it, right?
Yes.
So that, you know, so then, of course, it got, you know, put in, like, heavy rotation and made them, like, huge stars. I don't know. Just a lot of stuff like that. Now, the other thing, too, that's impressive about this book, they do not gloss over. In fact, they go pretty deep on the controversy of race.
Is that right?
MTV.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's to the point now where I always sort of wondered, like, was that real? Was it overblown? Was, mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of people in there who make excuses for how little MTV played, you know, music by black artists early on.
Yeah.
There's certainly, you know, excuses are basically, you know, one was like, well, we all came from a radio background and in radio you stick to a format. And so, you know, our format was, you know, rock radio.
Right.
And so
right.
to us that made perfect sense. Well, there's a couple problems with that was, they played a lot of videos by white artists who you wouldn't think of as being on rock radio. Like, let's say Culture Club, for
yeah,
example, right?
There you
like,
go. That's a good example.
You know, so
yep.
they made a lot of exceptions to that rule. So I'm not sure you really can follow that. And then second of all, although I will say Culture Club, kudos to them for playing.
Well, yeah.
You know, a band like that exposed people to, you know, that exposed an artist like that to the masses,
yep,
right? So
absolutely.
You know, but anyway, but and then there's also a lot of, you know, well, a lot of the black artists weren't very well funded by their labels, and so they didn't make music videos and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of, like, excuses being thrown around. But when you really read the whole, everybody's kind of perspective on that, you really come away from it thinking, like, they could have done more. They could, if the issue was with the labels, they pushed the labels on a lot of other things. They could have
pushed them on that.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of, MTV was starting to, have huge influence. And so to just sort of say, like, you know, it wasn't us, it feels disingenuous. The issue, of course, also why you can get away with that more in radio, number one, there's like tons of radio stations, so it's easy to pay attention to certain things and not others, whereas there was one 24-hour channel playing music videos.
Yep.
Right? So you kind of have to carry this different banner. But also just the visuals, right? When you start to
see... Well, there you go, yeah.
White face after white face after white face, you're sort of like, come on, this is not America, right?
Right.
This is, in some ways, with Michael Jackson and Prince and so on finally breaking through, the fact that it was a visual medium probably had a big impact on America, right? Like the music we listen to today, right, that we don't think so much about.
Interesting. Yeah.
The genres, you know, in the same way that maybe people did back then. So
I wonder what, and maybe they talk about this in the book, what impact or what was the genesis of stuff like Yo MTV Raps, and then on the other side of it, 120 Minute, stuff like that. Yeah.
So it gets into all of that, you know, when you get into the second half of the 80s, where MTV was really trying to develop shows because they realized like the just 24/7 of playing sort of anything goes, you know, just music videos all the time wasn't really going to carry them any further, right? They needed to start to build programming, but it was still all around music videos at that point, right? But yeah, what's so funny to read, this is again where the behind the scenes stuff is so good, because as a kid, you're watching this thinking like, these people must live glamorous lives and be, Ed Lover must, he's got to be rich, right? He's got to live. And you realize how low budget all this stuff really was in reality, right? Everything was just like, how cheap can we do it?
Yep.
You know, for the most part. But what it did was it gave people like that a lot of freedom. They could just kind of do, for the most part, kind of develop the shows that they... the way they wanted. I say for the most part, because obviously with anything, there's some give and take there when you're owned by, corporate masters. But,
right.
But anyway, they give them a lot of freedom because they would hire like young kids to be writers on these things, what I mean? And stuff like that, people they could pay cheaply. So they could develop, some personality in the shows. And then one thing I will say for MTV, to its credit, just me personally, for the most part, through that decade and into the 90s, it never really got square. There was some backlash, of course, because there is with anything that becomes big and popular. But even when you think of like Yo MTV Raps and 120 Minutes and Headbangers Ball and stuff like that, it felt like they knew what they were talking about. It felt like they were talking directly to the audience and had a good finger on the pulse of things for, I think for the most part. And not what you expect necessarily from something that by that point was owned by, like Time Warner Communications or something like that or whatever it was. I've already forgotten, but what I'm saying. It was launched by Warner Amex. And,
right.
Anyway, and then later, it was Viacom later on. So anyway, so I think they did a pretty good job of being quote unquote authentic for a pretty long run, I would say. And the one chapter in here, speaking of programming, that is just totally worth the price of admission. Like, you could excerpt this thing and just read this chapter, and it's just hilarious, is they did a show, the first time they really broke out of a show even based on music videos was this game show called Remote Control. You don't remember this? It came out
vaguely.
Late 80s.
Okay, I vaguely remember it.
And it was a game show that was really centered around, TV trivia. So there was a tenuous music connection, I think, at the very, in the bonus round or something. People had to identify music videos or something. But anyway, it was really, very different for what they did. And it was a game show. Again, very low budget. Like, how cheaply can we put this thing together? But they hired people. The host was this guy named Ken Ober, who was a stand-up. And also, and the co-host, the sidekick, was Colin Quinn, before anybody knew who Colin Quinn was.
Oh, wow. Wow.
They got kids, by kids, I mean college students or, that age in New York who were rising stand-ups to come on and do little bits and characters and stuff. Among those, Dennis Leary was on the show.
Wow.
And Adam Sandler.
Wow. That's interesting.
Pre-SNL.
Is this a show where it was in a basement? Or in somebody's living room or something like that?
Yeah, they were sitting in recliners.
Yes.
The contestants were sitting in recliners.
Okay, I remember now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, just read, if you just read that one chapter, you'll be That's so great. Entertained and laughing, because it's like, it's so insane. Like, you're just like thinking, like, again, they gave him a ton of freedom. They were able to do stuff, which is why I think it had a real sort of charm and appeal to it. But you're almost like, how did this even get on TV? Like, how? Like, it just, it seems impossible
yeah.
that they even like managed to do it. You know, there was a lot of that just very, you know, loose way of running things, right?
Yeah.
So, it's really funny. There's stuff in here about, you know, the drug culture at MTV.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the VJs and how much they talk about their lives and how they interacted with each other.
I remember, of course, the original five VJs and all that, and they talk about Martha Quinn and so on and so forth. There's really great stories about how they got their jobs, how they approached their jobs, how they didn't really. It took them a while to even understand what they were doing, because think about it.
Like, I know.
There was no
no roadmap.
There was no handbook for this no. kind of stuff, right? What is a VJ? Like, they didn't even quite understand. Alan Hunter talks about how he kept his part-time job, like tending bar for quite a while, because he wasn't sure.
Is that right?
If this thing was going to last, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, well, let me just say real quickly, the drug culture I mentioned, though, is really more the executives.
Is that right? Interesting.
At the network.
Ah, like a cocaine
thing. These guys. Yes. These guys.
Interesting.
Who came, a lot of them came from the radio industry, so they had connections already with the music business.
Yeah.
Or they came from the, you know, the record label, the music industry. Anyway.
Right.
These guys would crazy go out and party with like Rod Stewart and stuff like that.
Wow.
Like, you know what I mean? Like all the time, and just, you know, live these lives that you or I could not imagine. Right.
Right.
And
right.
A big reason why one of their big promotional efforts that really got MTV picked up by more cable systems back then was this campaign called I Want My MTV, which they were able to get people like Mick Jagger, Pete Townsend and so on to do these little promotional commercials, essentially. And that was all based on relationships. They mean,
wow.
that's the kind of relationships they had with artists, right, at that time, right, that they could get them to, you know, to do stuff like that.
That's so very interesting.
But these were the suits. You know what I'm
yep.
saying? These were not the people that you saw on TV, right?
Right, right.
Who apparently were making like all, you know, next to nothing.
Right.
You know.
Still tending bar. I love that.
And working. So. Now, the one guy who made a ton of money, apparently, or the highest paid VJ in the 80s, from what I gather in this, he was like in the next wave of VJs.
Uh-huh.
Adam Curry. I don't know if you remember him.
Not really.
He had sort of hairband kind of hair.
Yeah, I don't think I remember him.
And he got a big contract because he was already like a popular TV host type in the Netherlands.
Oh, really?
And so they hired him away. They just knew, I guess, he'd be really good at this or whatever. So they hired him away and they gave him some big contract. And I just find that so interesting because to me, my memory is like, he seemed like a lightweight. Like, he didn't seem like very interesting to me at all.
Interesting.
He had no real, kind of bland and no real personality, but he was like the big money star they had. And then the other one was Downtown Julie Brown.
I remember her.
I don't know if you remember her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't come off particularly well.
Is that
in
right?
This book, yeah, she was apparently she was difficult to work with.
But
the one guy who I thought was really funny. I don't know, listeners might remember this guy. This was in that same era. There was a guy named Kevin Seal who he was like really kind of squinty eyed. And he was kind of cool. I remember him being like, oh, I kind of connect with him more, kind of nerdy type. He was great. And what you get out of this is that he was like the guy who knew, like, this is all just a lark. Like, you know, it's silly, right? I'm doing a silly. So he always sort of treated it that way.
Wow.
And I think that's why, like, it was fun to watch him, because he didn't take it very seriously at all.
Totally.
And I think there's even a quote in there, somebody else saying, like, because I think he came from the Pacific Northwest or something. And, there's somebody in the quote in there saying, like, he arrived with, like, all of his possessions in a duffel bag, and he left the same way.
That's great.
You know, that was it, right? So, anyway, it's really fun. It's just fun.
That sounds fun.
You know what? And it's divided up into, you know, chapters that make sense. You know, you get, like, a different little story arc with each one.
Right.
But again, that oral history format to it just makes you laugh. Like, you just laugh, you know, half the time. It's like how ridiculous the whole thing is. And the early days of music videos, when there was, again, like, no, you know, guidebook for this, some of these bands were just like, we don't know what to do. And the directors at that point, they, a lot of them came out of like commercials, like directing like TV commercials, you know, stuff like that. And so the bands didn't really want to hear any of their ideas. And so they'd make stuff up. And some of them were just like so ridiculous. I read this whole story about the first Van Halen video. They did a video for Pretty Woman.
Mm.
So this was like pre-Jump and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess I've seen this video. I don't know. It was one of the ones that MTV like wouldn't show. It's like so insane to read the story. They were just throwing like all the craziest stuff, filming it. And it's like, it sounds like the most insane thing ever,
yeah.
Right?
So I can imagine. Oh. Yeah.
And then one last thing on that, on Van Halen, since I'm such a fan. Of course, when David Lee Roth started to realize the power of video, right, he really got into
it. Oh, yeah.
And as we know, right? And so when they were doing the video for Jump, which is an iconic video, and very simple, right?
Yep.
He had the director, he was like, I want you to film me driving around LA in my convertible or on my motorcycle or whatever, and we're going to put all this stuff in there, and we're going to edit it all together, and it's going to be this big, massive, you know, thing or whatever. And they humored him by doing all those shoots, but they had no intention of putting it in the video, right? And so then a lot of that footage was used in the Panama video, and there are those scenes where he's driving around, right?
Yeah.
So all that. So then they, I guess, made good later, but they were like, let's not mess with this Jump video. It's kind of perfect the way it is.
Right. Totally makes that, sense, right? Yeah.
Oh, and then one last thing. A surprise to me. I know you're a big fan of Journey,
yes,
Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
And you know the video Separate Ways where they're like on the dock?
I do.
And they're, you know, and they're like at one point like air playing their instruments, yeah, and stuff like that.
Right.
And love, it's just Steve Perry sort of walking backwards while he's singing and the camera falling around and everything. There is so much mockery of that video.
Is that right?
In this book, people are just laughing at how dumb it is. And I was thinking, like, because I was, you know, I don't know, I was in high school then. I was like, I always thought that was a cool video. I thought that was pretty creative. What are they talking about?
That's
here?
Great.
They're making fun of my childhood. So anyway,
you know, listening to this sounds so great. And it reminds me a little bit of, because you read this book on vacation, right?
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I don't know, gosh, it's been 10 years ago now, but I got to read on vacation that Motley Crue book, The Dirt, and it was just so much fun to read. You know, it was all these stories and crazy things that you read, but it sounds like this book would make a great vacation read without a doubt.
It's great, and thank you for mentioning that, too, because there's a lot on, like, the hair band scene in here, too, and I guess I didn't quite realize how much that took over MTV for a while.
Yep.
And the amount of excess in that,
oh my God,
portion
those,
of this book
those
is just
White Snake videos, if nothing
crazy.
Else.
Crazy. Oh, there's that in here too. And that's the other thing I want to say too is, and kudos to Rob Tannenbaum and Craig Marks for this. There are so many people interviewed in here. It's
oh, wow.
The talent, but it's also behind the scenes, but also so many people who were like bit players. Like they literally will talk to like the models who were in the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love.
Is that right?
Video.
Wow.
I mean, that's how deep it goes. They talk to everybody. So when you mention the Whitesnake, like Tawny Kinhane is obviously quoted in here, but you kind of know her. But I mean, they go to people who like you don't know, but you can know because you've seen them on TV, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're otherwise sort of nameless people. Really deep, really good insights in here. And then, as I mentioned, it kind of ends in the early 90s, and there's some really good stuff in here about the Smells Like Teen Spirit video as well,
right?
And what I did not know, although I guess you could, maybe it makes sense now, but Kurt Cobain, not a fan of that video.
Is that right?
Now, isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
right?
That is.
He thought that his biggest complaint was the cheerleaders were too good looking.
Is that right?
He wanted them to be like, you know, a little more like street level.
Oh, wow. Not models or potential models.
That's
right. Interesting.
And they had to convince them, well, that's like the way the image is going to work here is they actually are going to be like models, but they're going to be dressed down, you know, in that sort of, you know, grunge, I guess, look or whatever. And that's going to be irony of it, right? But anyway, he was not on board with that video, and wow. then he took much more control over the later videos.
Oh, did he? Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, there you go.
Well, great. Can't wait. Check it out. Gotta get it.
Really, really fun. And I think if you grew up with it, whatever era you most sort of relate to within that, you're really going to enjoy those stories. It's hard for me to judge if you didn't, if you're like,
that's a good point.
If you didn't live and watch MTV at that time, if it'll mean much to you, I don't know. It's a funny thing about this, you know, and they even call it the uncensored story of the music video revolution. Like, you're talking about a 12-year period of time here. And then when it went away, it just kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it
mm-hmm.
just, you know what I mean?
Yep.
People still make music videos, but it's not the same as it used to be.
No, I mean, in many cases, it was the video that made the song. And, yep. you know, you would not have a hit unless you had a good video. And you're right. And that whole, it's a conversation, obviously, for another time, but that whole shift from music video to reality TV and the way that all went, you know, that's another book, right? I'm sure it could be.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. That'll be the sequel.
Yeah. So, Jersey Shore and all that stuff.
Yeah. And Puck.
There you go.
There's a guy named Puck. Yes. Anyway. All right. So there you go. Check that out.
Well done, sir.
It's called I Want My MTV. Enjoy it. Now, I'm not going to do another book nook for a little while because the book I'm reading currently
uh-huh.
is about another passion of yours, but not music. All
oh,
right.
Okay. Okay.
Can I tell you what you want me to tell you what this book is that I'm reading?
I do.
It's called Inverting the Pyramid.
Oh, yes.
History of Football Tactics.
Love that
and
book.
By football, I don't mean American football.
No, that's a great book. It's a great book.
I'm a little ways into it, and
it's a big one.
It's a big one, and I'm quite enjoying it. But the reason I'm reading it is because soccer is not a sport that I grew up with or know very well. So I figure if I read this, maybe I'll know a little bit more about what's happening other than just people kicking a ball around.
Fabulous book. Jonathan Wilson is a great writer, writes for The Guardian. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm ever really going to fully really understand a lot of this stuff, but even just reading the history is so interesting.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, the WM formation, folks, go back and look it up. Yeah. It was an incredible thing how they used to line up.
It's really interesting. Yep. And there's some really colorful characters in it.
Oh my gosh. So yeah.
I'm just enjoying it from that standpoint.
Oh,
you know,
can't wait till you finish that and we can talk about it. It's great.
All right. Well, that'll be a different show.
Yep.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's get out of here.
All right.
If anybody would like to comment on MTV, though, whether, you know, you've read this book or not, you just want to talk about MTV, we could probably get some good episodes
out
of
that. Oh, yeah, we will.
So call, leave a message,
612-440-1984.
You can email rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you later.
Quinn, and I have been lucky enough to be able to see Pink Floyd, The Wall. It's an incredible movie. Bob Geldof, lead singer for the Boomtown Rats, is turning into, I think he's going to be having quite an acting career. He was unbelievable. And one lucky winner and a guest will win airfare to London on MTV, spending 3 days in a hotel. I mean, you can go outside of the hotel and everything, but we'll put you up 3 days in a hotel. And tickets to see Pink Floyd's The Wall on July 14th. Prizes include $300 spending money, plus Walkmans and Pink Floyd cassettes, 100 runners-up will receive a copy of The Wall soundtrack on Columbia Records, as well as a copy of The Wall book. And it's a lot of great stuff. You must be over 18 to enter, so keep watching for details. And send in your postcards, because you could be a lucky, and that's a real lucky winner.